Okay. We are holding on Lumber 12 on the bay, about 9 or 10, 9 lines from the bottom. We started saying yesterday that there's a machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir whether the lulav, whether you're allowed to bind the lulav with anything, or whether you daft have to use something from the same species as one of the dalad minim, for example, lulav leaves like we use nowadays. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to do it that way, and according to Rabbi Meir, you can use whatever you want. So we started saying yesterday that the underlying machloikas is that Rabbi Yehuda holds lulav tzarich egin. To fulfill the mitzvah, you have to have the three minim, the lulav, the hadas, and the arava, are bound together. So therefore, since the binding is an essential part of the mitzvah, if you use some of the min, then you've got 5 minim, they are not 4. It would be bal toisif. Whereas according to Rav Meir, that's not an issue because lulav ain't tzarich egin. So we had said yesterday, lulav ain't tzarich egin, that the lulav does not have to be bound to be yotze the mitzvah. The one that says you do have to said that. Well, that's why Rabbi Yehuda, who says you have to bind it, says that dafka. Therefore, you have to use one of the species that goes into the dalad minim. But we said Rava had said that actually you don't actually need literally one of the things that actually goes into the dalad minim in the sense of, for example, from a lulav, you dafka need lulav leaves. From a hadas, you dafka need hadas branches or whatever. It can be anything from that tree. For example, we said that when it comes to something that's considered the species of the lulav, you can use, for example, this little vine that grows around the bottom of a palm tree, even though it's not the lulav itself. The lulav itself comes from the top of the palm tree, but it's still considered the same basic species. So now the Gemara is going to go through to prove that Rabbi Yehuda in fact holds that way, that he holds that anything that comes from one of these plants is considered that meat.
Anything from the hadas tree
can be used for that. Anything from those. Incidentally, before we should talk about in that connection, if Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you have to use the dalad minim, what about the estrog? You can't use an estrog itself on the face of it. It's makabel truma. It's food. So some Mepharshim say that indeed, according to that, you would have to say that Rabbi Yehuda would say, for example, you can use, for example, wood from an estrog tree. Other Mepharshim, I think the Aruch on there has a problem with that, because the difference is, Mela with a lulav, okay, we know the lulav dafka has to be a palm branch from the top of the lulav, but nevertheless, the Torah doesn't actually specify what it is. It says kapri smart, and we learned the other day from a drasha how we know exactly that it's a lulav and nothing else. By the estrog, the Torah specifically says pre eitz hadar. It has to be a fruit. So then the wood is not, the wood is something else entirely. So they talk about different possibilities. Maybe if the estrog is smaller than a kibbutz, so it's not makabel terma. Maybe if it never became wet yet, according to the opinions that food that was never mukshel makabel terma can be used for schach, as long because we don't look at the fact that potentially it can become wet and then become makabel terma, etc. Anyway, so v'amar rav, 9 lines from the bottom. Minah minala. How do I? From where am I getting this idea? The sieve v'ikra d'dikla minah the lulavahu. That the sieve, this vine that grows around the bottom of the palm tree, or bark from the actual tree, would be considered the min of the lulav. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could use them for binding the lulav. The proof is going to be a little bit long. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa like this. The pasuk says basukas teshu. You should sit in sukkas. What do you mean sukkah shokol davar? It means the sukkah, the schach, can be made out of anything. Well, anything subject to the rules that we learned in the first parak. It has to be something that grows from the ground and is detached from the ground and not makabel terma, because that we learned from different other pasukim. But within that, it can be anything. Divir Rav Meir, Rabbi Yehuda ema ein sukkah nehegasel b'dalad minim shabalulav. Rabbi Yehuda says no. A sukkah can only be made out of the 4 species that go into the lulav. So the schach has to be from something from the lulav, from has to be made out of lulavim or hadasim or haravas or maybe a surrogin. And he says v'hadin noisin. In fact, he says I can make a kavachomer to prove this point. Or ma lulav she'en noiv v'lelus kibayamim. If you consider lulav, the mitzvah of lulav of dalad minim does not apply by nights like it does by days. Well, you know, you only take the lulav every day. You don't take it in between by night. And ein noiv elabah bas minim. And the Torah specifically limits it to 4 minim that are listed there. So sukkah, shenehegas, v'leilus kviyam, the sukkah, which is more strict, you have to be in the sukkah by night as much as by day. You have to eat in the sukkah by night as well as by day. You sleep in it, etc. In a din, shalo yehei elabat mas minim, much more so then that the Torah is implying that it has to be limited to those 4 minim. Amr Eloi, the Chum told him no. Kol din shata don tchilose lahachme v'sofer lahokel, in a din. If you make a gzera shava, not a gzera shava, a kapachomer, where it starts out, you're trying to make something strict, but it winds out being lenient, then that's not a good kavachomer. The whole point of a kavachomer is you want to say, this thing, which is more lenient, has a certain feature,
this thing that's more lenient has a certain feature. How much more so the strict thing should have that certain feature? It should be at least as strict. But here you're going to end up with, from that chumra, you're going to end up with a kula, because lo motza abas minim. What happens if a person does not manage to get one of the dalet minim? You have one year, a person doesn't have any dalet minim to do the mitzvah. Yehei yoshev batel. Should he sit there and not do the mitzvah of sukkah? So you're trying to make it a chumra that you're trying to limit the sukkah to being made only from these four species, but it ends up a kula that you may end up with a person who therefore does not fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah at all.
That would make it hard for them to against each other.
No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying that you're going to end up with a case where a person would have been able to make a sukkah out of something else. They'd be able to make it, for example, out of pine branches or branches from other trees and whatnot. But you're telling him, no, it has to be from lulavim and hadassim, etc., or nothing. The guy's going to say, okay, so I don't have lulavim or hadassim, so therefore I'm not making a sukkah this year. And that doesn't work. The Torah says that you have to sit in sukkahs for 7 days, which implies sukkah shokol dover, that it's a sukkah made out of anything.
What does Rabbi Yehuda say?
That's because he said, it's kama chomer that he said. That just like we see that tichon minim has to be dalet minim, so the sukkah, which is even stricter, that's a kama chomer. But Rabbi Meir is arguing, or the other chachamim are arguing to him, that's a kama chomer that can be shlugged up. Wait, we'll see in a second. After all, Reb Meir says, the Torah says, Basukas Keshu Shivas Yomim, which implies Sukkah Shokol Dover, that the Sukkah can be made out of anything. Yeah. V'chein be'ezra Omer, and so we also find in Sefer Ezra. Now, the pasuk we're going to quote is actually from what we call nowadays Nehemiah. But we've talked about this before, I think, in Yuma, that Ezra and Nehemiah were originally one long Sefer of Tanakh. The Goyim split it into two, the same way as they split Shmuel and Malachim and Tevra Yamim into two, because they felt they were too long.
That means one split up?
Yeah. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that actually the bulk of Ezra and of Nehemiah was all written, most of it was written by Nehemiah, actually. The Gemara says there the reason why the Sefer is not called after Nehemiah, even though much more of the material in it comes from Nehemiah, is because Shehechtik Tovel Afmo, that he writes over there in a pasuk, Zachor Li'elik, several times, Zachor Li'elik, Hayel Tov Hashem, remember me for me the good that I did in accomplishing such and such in Yerushalayim. So like there was a trace of Gaiva, sort of, and therefore he lost the chance to have the Sefer called by his name. But if you look in the actual combined Ezra and Nehemiah, so Sefer Ezra describes mostly the activities of Ezra, and it's written in third person because Nehemiah wrote it, and Sefer Nehemiah, the part that we call Nehemiah, is written in first person because Nehemiah himself wrote it, describing what he himself did. Ezra is mentioned in it because Ezra and Nehemiah lived at the same time, but he's not the central figure in it. Yeah, they were a few years apart. This is actually a Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah that discusses which one came to Yerushalayim first. Usually in most history books, you'll find that Ezra came to Yerushalayim, and then about a dozen years later, Nehemiah came. But there's a Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah that discusses the possibility that maybe actually Nehemiah came a few years before Ezra. Whatever it is, they lived in
Bava.
They both came from Bava, yeah. Whatever it is, they lived at the same time. Anyway, so v'chein be'ezra oimer. So in Ezra, the pasuk says, or actually in Nehemiah, Suhahar, the leaders of the people, Ezra and Nehemiah, the other members of the Sanhedrin of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, tell the people, Suhahar, go to the mountain, v'haviu alei zayis, and bring leaves of and bring olive leaves, v'alei eitz shemen, and leaves from an oil tree, which means either like a pine tree that has sap, that has very flammable sap, or it means a balsam tree or something like that, whatever it is. Valei hadas, and the leaves of hadasim, valei tzmarim, and leaves from palm trees, valei eitz aves, and leaves from thick trees, which we said before, anaf eitz aves, means hadasim. Vasu, lasso, sukkah, kakasuv, to make sukkahs, like it says in the Torah. So what do we see? We see that they're telling them, they're mentioning these five kinds of things, and only two of them are from the Dalet Minim, or arguably three, because the Gemara points out, and we learned in the first parak, isn't hadas and eitz aves the same thing? Not based on this in the Torah, we know it means hadassim. And the answer is that when the pasuk here says hadass, it means what we call nowadays a hadass shreita, the kind that doesn't have three leaves, the kind that's not mesholosh, the kind that has two leaves here, one leaf here, whatever. It's still the same species as hadassim. And eitz ovos means the proper kind, the kind that you can actually use for the lulav. Either way, though, the point is, Alei Tvarim and Alei Etzavet go in the law. In the law, of the other ones from an olive tree, from an Eitz Shemen, from those don't go into the Dalet Minim. So we see it. They're telling them build sukkahs out of those things. We see you don't have to use Dalet to have Dalet Minim. And Rabbi Yehuda Sava, Rabbi Yehuda would answer back. Hani Lebfonos, the ones that are not part of the Dalet Minim are going to be for the wall. Alei Hadas, Alei Tmonim, Alei Etzavet, the schach, the ones that belong in the Dalet Minim, the Hadas, the palm leaves. And the one and the Alei Etzavet, those are going to be for Tzchach. So in other words, he holds that they're telling them two different groups. Alei Zayis v'Alei Etz Shemen, use those for your wall. And technically you can use anything, but they're telling them as a practical matter, here's some things that you can use for wall. And then here's three things that you can use for your Hadat, for your Tzchach.
The wall is still the Sukkah.
No, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, agrees the walls can be made out of anything. Adarabba, we had much earlier in the sector. We talked about animals, but besides that, we said Rabbi Yehuda holds the Sukkah is fundamentally a Dirus Kvah. The sukkah is fundamentally a permanent dwelling. So therefore, the walls, that's why we said Rabbi Huda, that's why we said, according to Rava's understanding, that's why Rabbi Huda says the sukkah can be higher than 20 amos. That's why we said that Rabbi Huda doesn't like a sukkah that's supported by the sides of a bed. That was one reason. So
what did we say that Rabbi Huda's chacham is?
So the schach has to be for an Aramid, and the walls can be whatever you want, because the schach is fundamentally is the fundamental part of the sukkah. The sukkah is called that because of the schach, yeah.
So what point to this, what's the evergreen that we use now?
The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha is like the chachamim, that you can use whatever you want as long as it fits the criteria that we learned earlier. Yeah. Okay, so far, we've established from this bright, so that Rabbi Yehuda says you have to use things from the Dalet Minim, but Utnan, and then we learn in a Mishnah, we had earlier in the Masechta, Mesachin ben Asarin, Dibur Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda had said you can use boards of wood for Tzchach. Now wood, obviously, none of the Dalet Minim, or none of the actual Dalet Minim that we take every day of Sukkot are wood. So if he's saying you can use wood, what would wood come from? Would come from the trunk of a tree. Implying, for example, that you can take a palm tree and cut it and cut the trunk of it into boards. And Rabbi Yehuda would say, well, it's fine. You can take the trunk of an arava tree and cut it into boards. So we see from that that alma siv v'hikra the diklam in the lulavahu. So therefore, this finishes off Rava's proof. Therefore, you see in the same way when it comes to the vine around the palm tree and the bark of the palm tree, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, they're considered the min of the lulav. So you can use them for binding the lulav. The same way as he would say that you can use, again, the same way as he would say you can use a board made from the trunk of a palm tree, for example, for your tzach, the same way you can use a piece of this vine around the palm tree to bind together the minim. Shmaminoch, that proves it. You might ask, Miyom Rabbi Yehuda Abbas minin ein midi achrin eloi. Wait, are you telling me, though, that Rabbi Yehuda says that you can only use the dalet minim for your tzach, nothing else? V'hatanya, but we learned earlier in the Masechta, sikcha b'nesarim shal erez, if you made the schach with boards of erez, of cedar, which is not one of the dalet minim, sheyesh behen dalet tfachim, which is four tfachim wide, divrei hakol psula, and we said everybody says that it's possible. This was, we said earlier in the Masechta that this fits with how Shmuel explained the machlokas. Ein behen dalet tfachim, or actually how Rav explained it, rather. Ein behen dalet tfachim, if the boards are less than four tfachim wide, Rav Meir parts over Rabbi Yehuda Machshir, that Rav Meir says it's possible, Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher. Umoydir Rav Meir, and then Rav Meir agrees, Shem Yeshbe, Netzo the Netzo, Kimloy Netzo, that if you have between one board and the next one, you have the width of a board, Shemaneach Petzol Benehem, that you can put proper schach between them, Petzol Meloshem, Tzeres Gurin, V'yekiv, the leftovers of the wine press and the threshing floor, which is the where we learn what schach is. Uchsheira, and then it would be kosher. And we talked about in the first paragraph the details of that. According to, we said that actually what Meir means is you have a case, you have a board and then space with schach, and a board and space with schach, and so forth, in a way that comes out in the middle of the sukkah. You have eight tefachim straight of kosher to schach, because Meir says you can't sit under a board. You can't consider the boards at all to be schach. You just have to consider them like both an akuma, like a bent wall. He said.
You can't even though it's kosher, you can't eat under them.
That actually was a machloikus in itself, whether you can eat under them or not. But yeah. Anyway, the point is that the point is that why are we quoting this braisa? Because we see from it that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you're using the sarim shal erez, you're using cedar boards, and Rabbi Yehuda says in some cases it's kosher. What do you mean? Cedar is not one of the dalet minim. Yeah. The answer is my erez hadas. The word erez in this braisa actually means a hadas tree. Kidrava Barabhuna, which is what Rava Barabhuna said, the Amar Rava Barabhuna, Amri Bey Rav, they say in the Yeshiva of Rav, Asara Minea Rosenheim, there are 10 types of trees that are all called under the general term Erez. And the word Erez has a specific meaning, it means a cedar tree, but it also is the name of a family of trees, of which one of them is the Hadas. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Etzen Bamidbar Erez Shita Vahadas, for Gomer. It lists off, the Pasuk lists off their seven types of trees, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah explains that there's actually three more that have to be added to the list, that all of those are considered to be types of Erez. Maybe it's connected to the spheres. Maybe I don't know what the. I guess when we get to that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah in a couple of months, I'll see what there is about it and what deeper things there are about why we have that list. But be that as it may, I mean one of the things on that list actually is almug, which is coral. Coral is not even really a tree at all. It grows underwater. You know, it's made from the skeletons of little marine animals. But it grows. It's shaped some kind of coral, or shaped like a tree, and therefore we're considering it to be a type of tree, and therefore it's actually considered to be wood in halacha, and therefore we're considering it to be in the Erez family. So botanically, in other words, if you ask a scientist, you know, what belongs in the cedar family, he would never say that a hadas is one of them, but we're considering that it belongs in that family. So yes, therefore, when the Bryce says talking about you using boards of Erez, could mean you're using boards made from the trunk of a hadas plant, of a hadas bush. And that would and we said that Rabbi Huda would hold the kosher, because he holds that you need talad minim.
Only.
Then the Mishnah had said, "Rav Meir, I'm afilu b'mashicha chulah." That we had the machlokas in the Mishnah that Rav Yehuda says you have to dabke use the minim of the lulav. You have to use one of the dalad minim for binding the lulav and hadas men arabis. And Rav Meir said you can use anything. You can use even a string if you want. So Tanya, we learn in a braisa. So Amar Rav Meir, ma'ase v'yakiri Yerushalayim. It happened with the precious people, like the important people of Yerushalayim. Shoyu ovdenus lulavim v'gimonius shalzahav. They used to bind their lulavim with golden wires. Actually, I saw the Aruch has a dirsa, not yakiri Yerushalayim, meaning the precious people, the Jehovah people, but rather yehire Yerushalayim with a hey, meaning the proud, the bali gaiva of Yerushalayim, like they wanted to show off. Anyway. So they bound them with golden wires. So you see, you don't need
the top, not on the bottom.
That was the answer. Umrullah, they answered him, Mishamraya, you bring the proof from there. But Minu, how you Master, they bound it underneath that with actual lulav leaves or whatever. Then they wound the wire around it as a decoration or to show off or whatever. No, because it's not, because it's only, because not there for the essential mitzvah. The essential mitzvah is being accomplished by everything being bound together with lulav leaves. Everything on top of that is a decoration, as we're going to get to in a second. A decoration is not even considered a chitza. We'll get to in a second. Yeah. Meforshim ask, I mean, what is it? This braisa seems to just basically be repeating what we said in the Mishnah. What's the Gemara's point in quoting it? A couple of different explanations, but one of them is that the Mishnah had said Anshe Yerushalayim, meaning people of Yerushalayim. So okay, you might have thought the people of Yerushalayim, it says they're using golden wires. Fine, maybe that's all they use. They use a little bit of from the Mishnah, you would think, in other words, yeah, the regular people of Yerushalayim, fine, they could only afford a little bit of gold that they want to show off. So of course they use lulav leaves to bind the whole thing together. They couldn't afford enough gold to do that, and then they put one gold thread around it to make it look nice. So that doesn't prove anything. Whereas the Braisa is pointing in the Braisa, what we're pointing out is that even the rich people of Yerushalayim did this, where they could afford enough gold to bind the whole thing, the using only gold. Nevertheless, the Chachamim are telling the mayor that even they use lulav leaves underneath. So therefore, you see that they agreed that even these Yakiri Yerushalayim, these rich people, agreed you have to use the min of the lulav. Rabba once said to the people who were in charge of binding the Hashinus, meaning the Dalet Minim, at the Reish Galusa's house. We learned a few times in the Masechta already that in those days, what we call the Dalet Minim, they call the Hashina. But we carry him around when we say Hashinus. Anyway, so...
They said
Hashinus
every day.
They said it, sure. I mean, we also say Hashinus every day. Yeah. So they called it Hashinus. Well, except for Shabbos. Well, actually, in Minhag Ashkenaz, they do say Hashinus on Shabbos. They just don't hold the lulav and Esrog, of course, because you don't take them on Shabbos and they don't circle the bima. But yeah, if you look in Nusach Ashkenaz Siddurim, they've got Hashinus for Shabbos too. Okay. Anyway. Also, we'll learn on Amud Beis that one of the times when you shake the wolf and Esther during Hallel is on Hashem Hashir, is on Hashem Hashir, no? So for that reason also, maybe they call it, is why they call it a Shina. Anyway, so Rabbah told these people who were in charge of binding the lulavim there, Ki gadlitu Hashina de Beresh Kolusa, when you bind the lulavim of the Resh Kolusa's household, Shairi Be Beis Yad, make sure that you leave a space available to hold it, meaning. We're talking about what we're talking about is the way they bound the lulavim was more like was not like we do necessarily where we just use three rings of the lulavim and there's plenty of space to hold it, but rather they probably used something more like the keshalach that the velt uses, you know, these basket shaped things that they put the hadassim and aravis into. So therefore, what he's telling them is, make sure that you leave at the bottom of the lulav a space, enough space to be able to hold it without using the holder. Just holding the lulav and the hadassim and aravos themselves.
Between your hand and the lulav,
there shouldn't be any chatzitza. Right. In other words, so he's telling them, for example, make sure at the bottom over here you leave an open space, then start putting the keshalot starting from here, let's say. So this way you can hold it down here. And that's exactly what we're going to say in a second. According to Rabbi, it is a problem. Because he's telling them otherwise it will be a chatzitza. Rabbi Omar, Rabbi says, no, you don't need that. Anything that's there in order to beautify the mitzvah, which, okay, granted, according to the Chum, you don't have to bind the lulav and esrog, the lulav and hadath and arava, to be yotze. We said lulav ain't sorech eged. But still, you're doing it as a noy mitzvah. Even the Chum agree you're supposed to do it, because zekei liman veyu. So anything that's done to beautify the mitzvah is not considered a chatzitza. There is also the point about min min. We'll get to that
so
too.
So
that would be even if it's not the same min, exactly. And that would answer. So therefore, even if you're one of these yakiri or shalayim using golden wire, for example, that also wouldn't be an issue. You'd be allowed to hold it by that part because no, I say. The Amar Rabba, also Rabba said another din. Lo linkit inish hashayne besudra. A person should not hold the lulav in his sudra. A towel, basically. Yeah. The sudr, properly speaking, is the headgear that they used to wear in those days. It was like a turban with the ends hanging down, sort of lahabdil, like what some Arabs wear nowadays. So what we're saying is, a person shouldn't take the end of that sudr and hold the lulav and esrog in that. That's what we're saying. He shouldn't do it. Debrina lakichatama, because you need lakachtem, that it should be a complete taking, and it's not. Rava Amar, and Rava says it's still not a problem. Lakicha, ayde davaacha, shema lakicha. Taking something by holding something else is considered taking. It's considered that you're holding it. There is a considerable amount of discussion. There's a couple of Tosfos on it over here. There's other Rishonim that talk about what exactly is the difference. The previous one we were talking about chatzitza, and here we're talking about lakicha ayde davaacha. What exactly is the difference between those things? It doesn't amount to the same thing. And if you're holding it by the sudr, you have chatzitza, and you also have that you're taking it by something else. Why are we separating them into two different dinim? So there's a lot of discussion about it. One possibility that Tosfos brings up is maybe it depends whether we're talking about something that's wrapped around the lulav versus something that's wrapped around your hand. If it's wrapped around the lulav, it's bottled the lulav. Or maybe not, as Rabbah is saying. If it's wrapped around your hand, maybe it's bottled to your hand, or maybe not. So therefore, that would make the two distinctions. Tosfos themselves gives a different way of distinguishing. Lekichai gedava acher actually means that you'd be using your sudr as kind of a handle to hold the lulav. In other words, it's not we're thinking that what he means is, for example, you're taking the edge of your sudr and then you're holding your lulav in it, like this. What Tosfos explains is no. What we're talking about is, for example, you put the bottom of the lulav into your sudr, and you're holding it sort of like this. So you're not touching the lulav at all. So chatzitza is not really relevant. It's a question of is it picking it up using something else. Does that work? So Rava's saying no, and Rava's saying yes. In practice, because of that, and there's different other deists among the Rishonim, what exactly the distinction is between chatzitza and lekicha ayde davaacha. Practically speaking, you know, we try to make sure that there is no chatzitza. I believe that Munshine brings an oitzim and hagi chabat that even I don't remember if it was our Rebbe or one of the previous Rebbeim would actually wash his hands before taking the lulav and esrog to make sure that there's nothing on his hands. That would be a chatzitza.
So according to this here, the three rings that we use should be above where we...
No, because we said before, kol l'ma'oseh e'nechotetz, anything that's meant to beautify the mitzvah, is not a chatzitza. So yes, you're allowed to hold it by that part that has the size which min b'mino, that we'll talk about on the base. That's the same min as the lulav, but that's another matter. But here we're talking about because the rings are there to beautify the mitzvah, then you're allowed to. What we're saying is you shouldn't hold the lulav using, for example, a towel or like we were just describing, using a towel, the handle for it or whatever. Yeah. Right, that Tosfos brings that over here, that Kohen Gadol is... Right. So that's the thing. Tosfos mentions that in the course of this discussion about that Kohen Gadol, Yisacho Ish Kfar Bakai, that he got punished for doing the Avodah that way. But that's what Tosfos is arguing. Maybe the thing is not so much that it was considered a chatzitza, but that it shows that it's a bizoyan for the Kodshim, the fact that he doesn't want to get his hands dirty with the Kodshim. But maybe technically it wasn't considered a chatzitza. Omar Rava, Minam in a lot of Lakicha, where do I get this idea that taking something by means of something else is called taking in Halacha? It's none. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Parah. We've talked about a lot of times that you have to use a piece of azov, a type of plant, oregano or something from that family, to dip into Parah Adruma water to sprinkle on somebody or something that's Tomei. What happened? So now the thing is like this, Rashi describes. The way they did it in those days, so you had, there's one paraduma burnt every, couple of decades, 100 years or whatever it was, however often they did it. Then nine times in history it's been done, right. Okay, so yeah, so once every couple of decades, let's say, they'd find they need a new paraduma. They'd burn the paraduma, they'd go through the whole process, then they'd gather up all the ashes, and some of it gets distributed around Eretz Yisrael. What they would do, as Rashi describes, they would put the ashes into long tubes, and then they'd put in water over there. Actually, they'd put the ashes, and then they'd send around these sealed. There were sealed tubes of paraduma water go traveling from place to place in Eretz Yisrael. This way, it would stay sealed, and this way they'd have it when they needed it, and it wouldn't spill.
Water, they mixed the water in
right
away, so they'd use it.
Sometimes they would, but sometimes what we're saying is that not necessarily they would. Sorry, you're right. I misunderstood it. Right. What they used to do is they used to send around the dry ashes in these tubes. I was right. The next case that we're going to talk about is a different case where the dry ashes are in tubes. Here we're talking about, Rashi says, Shahayimavian Mechatas, they would carry Mechatas, Me'ir Le'ir, from one city to another, Veshvoiferes Shokanim Arochos, in long, skinny tubes made out of reeds, Umatsniyanois and Behem Tarif Me'im, and they would keep those aside for making tar, people who were tummy, Umatsnila Ezev Abaza, and then they dip the Ezev into it and sprinkle. So the point is that you have this long, skinny tube that has paradromal water, that has water with the ashes mixed into it. So now what happens? So now you have to dip the azov into it to sprinkle. What happens if you have a piece of azov that's not long enough to reach all the way down into the tube, all the way to the water? So azov kotzer, if you have a short piece of azov, misapka, you can make it longer, as long as you need, b'chut of a kush, for example, by tying a string to it, or by attaching a kush, which is a long needle, into it, not really a needle, actually, it's a spindle, or whatever, some of a long, thin thing like that, v'tovo, and then you dip the azov in, or mala, and you pull it out, v'oichiz be'azov, or maza, and then you hold on to the azov itself and sprinkle. Rashi says, in theory, you could actually hold on to the string or the needle or whatever and sprinkle using that too. The problem is then you won't be able to aim it accurately. You have to be able to aim the part of drum of water on the thing or the person that became tummy. You're not going to be able to do it if you have one thing. If you have a needle, for example, and then a piece of azev attached to it with the water at the end of the azev, so necessarily you'll have to hold on to the azev to do the actual sprinkling. But at least you can use, even though the pasuk says that you have to dip the azev itself into the water, we're seeing that you can hold on to the needle onto the handle, and forget about chatzitza. We're saying it's considered lakicha. That's the question. You hold on to the ezev umaza, and then you sprinkle. Now amai. Now why would that work? The lokach atovel avrachman. The pasuk says you have to take the water with the ezev and sprinkle. Or rather, you have to take the ezev and you have to dip it. So doesn't that prove that taking something using something else, in this case holding the ezev by the needle, is good? Shmolachicha. The Gemara says, no. Mimai. Says who? Dilma shiny hasa. Maybe it's different over there. Kibben de chavre, given that you attached them together, you actually stuck the needle into the ezev or tied them together or whatever, kugufay dami. Maybe you're ready. Once they're attached, then it's considered more like the same thing. You can't prove from that necessarily that in a case where we're talking about over here, for example, you know, where you're holding the lulav inside a towel, the towel's not attached to the lulav. Maybe it wouldn't work. Ela mehacha. So no, rather we can learn it from the following din, also in the halachas of parah adoma. And here's where we're talking about that sometimes these tubes would just contain dry parah adoma ashes. What they would do is then, when it came time to mix the ashes into water, so Rashi says actually what it is as much as possible they tried to use kalim for this purpose that cannot be makabel truma. One type of kalim that cannot be makabel truma are stoneware. Kalim made out of stones, out of hollowed out stone. In Yerushalayim, 30 or 40 years ago, they discovered in excavations they found a house that had been destroyed at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, where they found all the utensils in this house were made out of stone. And based on that, and based on one or two inscriptions they found in the house, they figured out this must have been a house where Kohenim lived, and therefore they wanted to make sure to keep everything tahor. You can visit it nowadays. It's called the Burnt House. Yeah. Anyway, so Rashi says then that so Rashi says they used to do that over here when it came to preparing parah adoma water. So therefore, they would fill up a shoikes, which is like a trough, a stone trough with water, and then they would pour the parah adoma ashes into that. Tosfos argues on that. Tosfos says that what about the tube itself in the makabel truma? And besides which, we find in many other places they did use other kinds of kalim. So Tosfos says that not necessarily specifically are we talking about a stone trough over here, which is whatever, a trough full of water. Anyway, the Mishnah says nafal mishfeferes l'shoikis, if the ashes just fell out of the container, out of the tube into the water, then it's possible, because it has to be that you actually put it in. The nosan olav mayim chayim okeli. It has to actually be that you place the ashes into the water. So if it just fell in by itself, then it's possible. But hagi pilei hu kasher, which implies if the person himself knocked it down. In other words, usually the way you would do it is you take the tube full of ashes and you actually pour it into the water. What if you didn't? We seem to be saying that what if you just, you know, the tube of ashes is standing over here and you knocked it over like this, and some of it spilled into the water. It sounds like it would be kasher. Only if it fell over by itself would it be a problem. Now, again, you have to ask why. The lakhu v'nosan, Amar Rahman, the Pasuk says they should take from the ashes and place them into the water, which means that you have to do it directly. El alav shmamino, so therefore you can prove from that, l'kicha yedavacha shmo l'kicha, that taking something, using something else, is considered taking. Actually, if we didn't say that, it probably wouldn't even be good enough to take the tube and shake it out. You'd probably have to actually reach into the tube and take a pinch of it and put it in the water. But like this, since we're saying that you don't need that, then yeah, you can even knock over the thing or shake it or whatever. So by the same token, then when it comes to the lulav, yes, you can hold it using a kerchief, a handkerchief or whatever, and it's not necessarily a problem. Well, it could be a chitzitza, we're saying, but it's considered l'kichai yadav acha. That's what we were saying before. According to Tosfos' explanation, you're taking it, you're using the towel like a handle.
That's okay.
No, yeah. Another din, v'omar rabba, l'ilabut inish it lulav v'hashayna. A person should not stick the lulav into the hashayna bundle. Meaning, so Rashi describes, you know, nowadays, I mean, the usual way we bind our lulavim is, you know, we put down the lulav on the table, we put the hadassim and our rabbis next to it, and then, you know, we put the rings around them. Apparently, in those times, again, you know, this would make better sense, I guess, if they used keshalach in those days, is they'd bind together the hadassim and the arabis, and then maybe they could stick the lulav into the middle of the bundle. So Rabbah is saying you shouldn't. Keshalach is like you can see the velt does them a lot of times. You have these woven holders made out of lulav leaves that the hadassim go around one side, the arabis on the other, and the lulav goes in the middle. Yeah. So Rabbah is saying don't stick the lulav into the middle of the bundle. The dilma not to be tapi because it can cause leaves to fall off of the hadassim and arabis. But have a chatzitza, and then you'll have chatzitza between the lulav and the other minim. If you have the hadassim and arabis already there, and you stick the lulav into the middle, you're going to knock off, you're going to rip off a few of the leaves from the hadassim and arabis. Not enough to make them puzzle, maybe, but enough that now there'll be a chatzitza. Those loose leaves will be a chatzitza between the lulav and the rest of the hadassim or the arabis. That's the thing. Rava says it's not an issue. It's all considered. It's all the same min, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Even though it's not ripped off, exactly. And a similar din for Amar Rabba, lo ligruz inish lulav of a hashina. A person should not cut off the lulav after it's already in the hashina bundle. The halacha is that min b'minei nechaytetz. Yeah. So therefore, we don't have to worry about the loose leaves in there. You have to worry about leaves falling off your hadassim and aravos for a different reason. If enough of them fall off, then it's possible, but not because of chaytetz, right? So for Amar Rabba, lo ligruz inish lulav of a hashina. A person should not cut the lulav while it's already in the hashina bundle. Meaning, sometimes you have that the a person will put together the lulav hadas men aravos and then decide, you know what, the lulav is too long. I want to cut it. And you can't cut it from the top, of course, that would make it possible. But what you do is you cut it from the bottom and then you pull out that piece that you cut off and then throw it away or whatever. The problem with that is that the mishtairi hutza. The problem with that is that leaves are going to end up getting left over. Lulav leaves are very long, so when you cut off the bottom couple of inches of the lulav, you're going to end up with some of the higher leaves. They're going to be disconnected, and they're going to stay in the bundle after you took off the part. And so now you're going to have a different kind of chatzitza. V'havi chatzitza. And again, Rava amar min b'minayin chatzitza. Again, Rava says it's not an issue. It's min b'minayin, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Why we have to have the two different dinim? Mefarshim talk about that maybe the difference is maybe you could argue that the leaves of the hadas and the arava are not considered a chatzitza for themselves, basically, but maybe the leaves of the lulav could be a chatzitza between them and the others, yeah. The Amar Rabba, another din that Rabba said, hadas shal mitzvah also lahariach boy, the hadas that you're using for the mitzvah during sukkahs, you're not allowed to smell it during sukkahs. But esrog shal mitzvah mutzvah lahariach boy, but the esrog you are allowed to smell. My timer, what's the reason? Hadas l'reichakoi, a hadas is only meant to smell. A hadas is not edible. So therefore, ki aktsiye, when you make it muhtza, now in general, we haven't really gotten into this very much. We'll get more into it in the next perek, that the sukkah and the sukkah and the dalad minim are off limits for use, for any other use, doing sukkahs. When you build your sukkah before sukkahs and you start using it, the material of the schach and the material of the walls, actually this we talked about in the first parak, and even the decorations, for those who do decorations, are off limits, all of sukkahs, unless you made a tanai on them. The hadas and the...
No, wait.
At the same thing with the same thing with the dalad minim. You can't decide in the middle of sukkahs, for example, that you want to eat your esrog and you'll just go buy another one. It's set aside for the mitzvah throughout the day. Okay, but fine, those are cases where you can't be buying things. But okay, let's say, for example, you got a hold of another esrog, You might say, so I'll eat my first one and then I'll use this one. You can't do that. So a hadas is meant only for smelling. Ki aktsiye, so when you set it aside, when you made it muktzah, that now it's no longer able to be used doing sukkahs for anything else but for the mitzvah, merecha aktsiye, what do you set it aside for? Then I'm not going to smell it, because that would normally be what you do with it during the year. Esrog de la achilakoy, and esrog is made to be eaten. Ki aktsiye, so when you make it muktzah, me'achila aktsiye, you only were maktzeh, you only set it aside out of mind from eating. You never had in mind to make it muktzah as far as smelling. You can smell it. Well, I don't know about that necessarily. I mean, so there is actually, so that actually brings up an interesting point, that the post can talk about the question, if you do want to smell the esrog during sukkahs, what bracha should you make on it? Normally the bracha you'd make on an esrog is a noitin reyach tov b'peris. But in this case, maybe since you're not supposed to eat it during sukkahs, so maybe it's not considered a peri. Maybe you should say berim nevesamim on it, or maybe not. So actually, because of that, I believe the Magen Avraham says that in fact, given a choice, don't smell the esrog during sukkahs in order to avoid the problem. Yeah. Practically speaking, also most of these kinds of things only give off a smell when they're crushed a little bit, and you're not going to want to crush your esrog in order to,
You take
shamim
and the esrog together.
Ah, so then fine. Then you might say, "Hanos and Rechtei on something else." And okay, yeah. The Amar Rabba, and Rabba said another din. This one has nothing to do with Hilchas Sukkah per se. This one actually has to do with Hilchas Shabbos. What we're mentioning is because of the similarity. We were talking about smelling the hadas and the esrog. Here we're going to talk about a similar thing as far as Hilchas Shabbos. Hadas b'mechubar mutal harich. Boy, a hadas that's attached to the ground, you're allowed to smell. Esrog b'mechubar also harich. But an esrog that's attached to the tree, you're not allowed to smell it. My time. So the opposite of the din of smelling them during sukkahs. My timer, hadas l'ariach koi, the reason is because a hadas is basically meant to smell. If you allow him to sniff it, he's not going to come to cut it from the ground, because why? He can just as well smell it while it's attached to the ground. Esrog, whereas an esrog is meant for eating, so if you allow him to smell it, he may forget and cut it off the tree. Or actually, it actually says he may, not when we say cut it off the tree, he might actually bite into it while it's on the tree. But that would also be toilish, that would also be a malacha, either Mephoshim discussed would it be daraisa or derabanan, but whatever it is, it would be also. So therefore, don't smell it because you might come to cut it off or to bite it off and eat it.
I was just tonight in my esrog, and it has a wonderful smell. It's shrunk, so the smell comes out.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually. Rabbeinu Chananel has a gusa the other way around, as far as this last one, as far as the thing from Hilchos Shabbos. He says that on the contrary, hadas you're not allowed to smell, and the esrog you are. That's his gusa in the Gemara. And so the Rosh discusses why that should be. It was something along the lines of, I think, that the hadas, since you may tack a forget and pick it in order to be able to smell it wherever you want, whereas the esrog, since you know that the chachamim are not going to allow you to that the Torah or the chachamim are not going to allow you to eat it on Shabbos to bite it off or pick it off, therefore you'll refrain from doing that, and therefore you'll limit yourself to just smelling it. And Shulchan Aruch does actually bring both opinions. I believe most poskim pass it according to the girsa that we have over here, though, that you are allowed to smell an esrog while it's still, hadas, that you're allowed to smell a hadas or flour or whatever while it's attached to the ground, and that's whatever paskim is that way in Shulchan Aruch. You're allowed to smell attached flowers, but not attached food. The Amar Rabba, and Rabba says another din, lulav v'yamin v'esrog v'smol. The lulav goes in your right hand, the esrog goes in your left hand. My timer, ha'nitzlos, a mitzvah, v'ha'nichod, a mitzvah. The lulav consists of three components of the mitzvah. It has the hadassim and the harovus with it, and the esrog is only one. Amalei Rav Yirmi l'Rav Zirka, so now Rav Yirmi asks Rav Zirka, related to that, my time loyma vachin el al matilas lulav. Why do we say the bracha only al matilas lulav? Why do we not mention the dalad minim? Or maybe specifically we should mention the esrog. The esrog is mentioned first in the pasuk. And the answer is hayov gavoyim mikulan, because the lulav is the tallest of all of them. So therefore, it's the most important. What do you mean? If it's the tallest, v'lig v'el esrog v'ligrin. So if we're talking about the tallest, meaning it's the furthest off the ground, fine. The esrog you can put wherever you want. Pick up the esrog higher than the lulav, and then say the bracha on that. Amalei, so Rav Zirka answers him, Hayol of a mina yavoy mekulam. We don't mean that it can be higher. Of course, any one of them can be higher than the other. What we mean is, physically, the lulav is the tallest of all the minim. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper meaning behind this. We always say that, the famous thing, that esrog represents the guy who has Torah and mitzvahs, the lulav is the one who only learns Torah, doesn't do mitzvahs, the hadas the other way around, the arava has neither. So, if so, you would think the esrog should be the biggest of the minim. It should be the size of it should match the mila of the person. And the gist of it is that Rebbe answers, first of all, when we talk about these four three different types of people, we don't mean, for example, the lulav is somebody who only learns Torah and doesn't do mitzvahs. A person can't just learn Torah without doing mitzvahs. That doesn't work. It means he focuses mainly on Torah. He does mitzvahs, of course, but his main focus is Torah Seyum Naseh, that he focuses single-mindedly on learning Torah. And vice versa. But the Hadas guy, it's not that he doesn't learn Torah at all. Everybody has a mitzvah to learn at least Perek Echad Shachos and Perek Echad Arvos. But his main focus is mitzvahs. So when it comes to, when we're talking about which one actually, whereas the esrog gives equal time to Torah and mitzvahs, the Eibush made that the lulav is the tallest, and therefore that's the one we make the bracha on to demonstrate that the Tamar Chacham, the one who's actually focused on Torah Seyum Naseh, is in a way better than the esrog who's spending a lot of his time on mitzvahs, and therefore is not single-mindedly focused on the one thing, on limudat Torah.
Yeah. Basically, we can read from the Hasina.
The esrog avirabad is the famous thing that the esrog esrog stands for altereini rego gaiva. That the esrog can be the kind of person who can come to gaiva. So maybe. That what? Oh, altereini rego gaiva. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you. Mishnah says, "V'heichan hoyu menanin." Where do they wave the lulav? V'hodu l'Hashem tchilu v'soif, at hodu l'Hashem at the beginning and the end. Tosfos discusses over here, does it mean at the beginning and end of the perek, like we do? Or does it mean actually the beginning of the pasuk hodu l'Hashem and the end of that same pasuk? Maybe you wave separately each one. Tosfos says that not, but Tosfos does bring another possibility, which some people actually have this minhag, that every time we repeat hodu, during the, you know, after Yom HaNoyisrael, we repeat a Hoidu, and after Yom HaNoyisaren, there's an Armin Hagin, that in each one of those, they wave it. Armin is not like that, though. So, but Hoidu L'Hashem Tchila B'Soif, or by Anah Hashem O'Shiyana, and by Anah Hashem O'Shiyana, Divir B'Tzilol, or by Shama O'Yim after Anah Hashem Atzlichana. But Shama says you also wave it by Anah Hashem Atzlichana. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Soifu Ho'Yisi B'Rabbi Gamliel B'Rabbi Yeshua, I was watching Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, Shekolahom hayu menanis l'olvei, and everybody else was waving the lulavim at Anah Hashem Atzlichana. The heim lo niyin u'ela ba'Anah Hashem Hoshiyana. They, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, only waved it by Anah Hashem Hoshiyana. So we see, even though most people were following Beth Shammai, nevertheless, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua were going like this hillel, and the halacha is taka like that. A couple of interesting things about that, by the way. Tosfos quotes over here, where taka do we know that we should be waving the lulav davka by these psukim? We get it from the psukim that we say in Hoidu every day. We say, Oz Yiranenu Ase Hayar, the trees of the forest will be happy. Milukne Hashem ki valishpo tasaret, because of Hashem who came to judge the world. Then we continue, Hoidu l'Hashem ki tov ki l'Elam chaste, v'imru hoshienu eleke yishenu. The connection is like this. We know the famous thing, the Medrash brings it, the Rebbe used to quote it a lot of times, and it's quoted in many places in the Chassidus, that the one reason why we take the Dalet Minim right on Sukkot, which is right after Yom Kippur, is like, two people have gone to court. You don't know which one won his case. You see the guy who comes out with a spear up in the air, he's obviously the one who's victorious. So the same way we hold our lulav and Esther high up to show that we won. So we lift Hashem ki valishpo tasaaret, after Hashem has come to judge the world, then oz yiranenu kolat tayar, that's when all the trees of the field are happy. So we're waving them in simcha. They're shaking, they're waving around in happiness. When do we do that? When we say Hoidu L'Hashem Ki Tov Ki Lo Mechaste, and when we say V'Imru Hoshienu Alekei Yishenu, which is on Hashem Hoshiana.
Sorry, just to have shaking.
Why specifically? No, but that's why. Because that's why we're saying we're waving the Dalet Minim at that time.
Trees,
yeah.
Right. But why the trees?
Why the trees specifically? Yeah. I once saw a Gleich Vertol that somebody was not doing so well in business and wanted to move away. Maybe it was to move to America. In those days, they thought it was a trade from Medina. I don't remember what the story was exactly. But he goes to ask his Rav. The Rav tells him, "Listen, you know, we see in Hallel we move around the lulav by Anah Hashem Hoshiyana. We don't by Anah Hashem Hatzlichana, which means if it's a matter of Hoshiyana, they actually need to be saved. Then fine, move around as necessary. If it's just Hatzlichana, you're not having a Hatzlacha." Stay for
it.
We'll talk about that in a minute. What the Nanuim are for? Yeah, we'll get to that in the Gemara in a few lines. The Reb Levick brings in a couple of places in Lakuta Levi Yitzchok and Tertus Levi Yitzchok. The deeper thing behind this machlokas the Shammai Betzilol is that Hatzlocha has to do with Gvuras. He brings from various places that we see that Hatzlocha has to do with Gvuras, among other things, because the word Hatzlocha actually means to split. The literal means talach means like to split wood. For example, we find the lashon in the Gemara. And splitting is an expression of gvura. So therefore, Beis Hillel, who are from the Tzadah Chesed, they say only by Anah Hashem Hashiyana. Beis Shammai, who is from Midas Gvura, from Tzadah Smol, they say also by Anah Hashem Atzlichana.
Rabbi Yeshua is
all over.
Yeshua is Chesed and
Atzlacha is gvura. Yeah. There's one other interesting thing on this. We're saying that everybody in the Beis Mikdash was waving, or wherever this was, in Shul, wherever it was waving the Lulavim by Anah Hashem Atzlichana, and only Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua didn't. So actually, some people ask about this. Isn't there an issue of Lo Tizgoida? You're not supposed to act different than the other people in Shul.
Yes,
still, it wouldn't hurt to shake it by Anah Hashem Atzlichana. So actually, the Ketzos HaShulchan of Avraham Chaim Noah mentions on this that therefore we see from this that not doing something is not considered Lo Tizgoida. They didn't wave the Lulavim by Anah Hashem Atzlichana. Fine, that's not. If they were to do something when everybody else is not doing it, that would be an issue. On the other hand, I saw something from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and what it means is, what does Rabbi Akiva mean, so far, you see, I was watching them. They need to watch, you need to gaze at them. I mean, anybody can see this. It means everybody else was again shaking the lulavim by Anah Hashem Atzlichana. Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua didn't want to show, didn't want to demonstrate that they're acting differently from that. They just took their time over the ones from Anash HaMashiach, so they're still waving them for Anash HaMashiach while everybody else is busy with the ones from Anash HaMashiach. So Gemara asks, Nanuaman Dechar Shmei. Where did we ever have anything mentioned about Nanua? The Mishnah is starting off the Heichan Hoyim Ananim as though it's a given that you have to wave the lulav, whoever talked about waving it. The answer is Hasam Koy, referring back to what we said at the beginning of the parak. Kol lulav shesh b'shloshat tfachim kadeh l'naneh b'y kosher. A lulav that's at least three tfachim long enough to wave it, enough to shake it, is kosher. V'kamer. So now we have to say Heichan Mananin. So where is that shaving, where is that shaking actually taking place? Tanana, some of the Gemara says, we learn in a Mishnah in Menachos, Shtei Alechem or Shnei Kivsei Atzeres, the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos, and the two Kvasim that went with them on Shavuos. Ketedoi, so what do you do with them? Those are among the Korbanos that have to be waved. We have in this week's Parsha that every Shlomim, Bechaza, and Shoik has to be waved, but also on Shavuos, the Shtei Alechem and the Shalmei Tzibur that go with them have to be waved. So what is the waving? He put the shtei alechem on top of the two sheep, and he puts his hand underneath them, and he waves them, and he brings them up and down, and he brings them back and forth, and up and down. Shenema, as the pasuk says, asher hunach v'asher huram, which was waved and which was picked up. So hunach means means side to side, either front to back or side to side, or maybe all of them, and huram means up and down. So therefore, we see that you need both. And Amar Rabbi Yechanan, this is what you were just saying, Yaakov. Molech maybe lemisha abba ruchas shaloi. You move it in the four directions to represent that you're doing it in honor of Hashem, that all four directions belong to Him. Malo meir lemisha shemayim v'aretz shaloi, and you bring it up and down in honor of Hashem, that the heaven and earth belongs to Him. B'ma'al rava masnevachi. You know, it's Israel, they taught differently. You bring it back and forth in order to stop bad winds. So you do it to the four directions where winds can come from, that they should keep away bad, destructive winds. And you bring it up and down to keep away bad dew. You wouldn't think that dew could be a bad thing, but there's actually a tesefta at the end of Sota that discusses the idea that yes, you could have dew that dew usually helps keep the produce fresh or whatever, but if there's too much of it, it can make it rot, or it can make it turn black or whatever. So yeah, so there can be slolim roim. So we're doing it up and down to prevent that. I saw a vork, by the way, that ruchos rois represents exactly like in a person himself. Ruchos rois represents the bad spirit that makes a person want to the yetzahara that makes a person want to be rabbeinus. Tlolim roim represents bad thoughts. It represents bad like you have tal Torah, you have tlolim roim, which is the thoughts and ideas and then philosophies and whatever that are the opposite of Torah. So you need to stop those. I think this was from Reb Tzadok HaKoyen. Amr Rab Yosef ba'oven v'item Rab Yosef ba'zvila zoyse meret. You can see from that that shiore mitzvah ma'achmenes ha'peronos, that even the leftovers of a mitzvah, things that are not considered the essential thing of a mitzvah, still stop the peronos, still keep away punishments. Shari tshnufa shiore mitzvah, because we see that waving the shtei alechem or the shlomim or whatever is a shiore mitzvah. It's not ma'akiv. If a person brings a korban shlomim and they don't wave the chaz of a shaykh, or by the Shtei Alechem if they don't wave them. It's not Ma'akev, the mitzvah. But it says, it's Ruchas, it's Loim Norim, and we see, it's Loim Norim, and yet we see that it stops bad destructive winds and destructive dew. Yes, so even though the waving of the Korbanos is not essential to the mitzvah, but still, we see how important it is that it has such a schut. Yeah, Amar Rava, v'chein v'lulav, and Rava says the same thing applies to waving the lulav, that you have to wave it in all directions, like that. The Smith says an interesting thing on this in his Akdama to his commentary on Shulchan Aruch. He wrote the Smith, say from Iris Hanayim, wrote a Pirush on Choshen Mishpah, and he intended to do the rest of the Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch, but then he passed away. He writes, He Bechlal was not too fond of the idea of writing down the Halacha in a sefer like Shulchan Aruch, as opposed to learning everything from your Rebbe face to face. And he says, you have an example over here. We're talking about that you have to wave the lulav. And there's a Yerushalmi on it that talks about you have to wave it three times each one. And then what does that mean? Tosfos discusses what that means exactly, what that Yerushalmi means. Does it mean, for example, one, two, three, or does it mean like we do one, two, three? Or does, and does it mean three in each direction, or does it maybe mean like one, two, three, something like that? And then there's those different Rishonim and Achronim that all get into the act, and they and each generation after the other, he says, like doesn't understand the previous one. So he says how, you know, you can see from that, he says, how much was lost when Torah Shabbat Peh had to be written down, as opposed to if we learned Torah Shabbat Peh from Rebbe to Talmud, you wouldn't have all of this. You wouldn't have all of this kind of uncertainty.
Yeah, but there was a lot of upheaval.
Obviously, we know that. I mean, you know, Eitz Lach Slash Hem, but we know, we understand why they had to write down Torah Shabbat Peh, but the Smeh is still pointing out that look how much we lost from it. Yeah. Anyway, Rab Acha bar Yaakov, Mamti Leo Maiti Le, Rab Acha bar Yaakov used to tack a wave a little back and forth. Omer, and he used to say, Dein Dira Be'ene De Satna. This is an arrow in the eye of the Satan. Meaning, he's saying, in other words, like, when the Yetzihara sees how devoted we are to mitzvahs, then he'll realize, you know, he hasn't got a chance against us. Yeah. However, the Gemara says, V'lav Milti. Actually, that's not a right thing to say. Mishum da'afi li goruyebe. Adadaba, that races on the Sultan even more to try even harder to get you to get you off the derech. So, don't do the mitzvah without, you know, without actually saying that you're doing it as a poke in Sultan's eye. Like really, it's like to race him on, like to he'll get all the angrier and try to, you know, yeah. You can see, yeah, you guys, Hashem should yell at you the Satan, not that you're saying that I'm poking out the Satan's eye.
We're not doing the Lucas, the different Lucas. We have one some hard to fill, I think, wipe away the bad winds and the bad sins, no.
And in the Siddur, it doesn't say any such thing specifically, I don't think, but, yeah, you know, I mean, that's one of the things to have in mind.